The tribal chief himself, Roman Reigns, is sending a text. Now, DC, he's reminding me that he gave us a shout out on his platform. He wants it returned. We are now square, Roman Reigns. Good guy, bad guy starts right now.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Good Guy, Bad Guy. I'm Daniel Cormier. That is my partner, Chael Sonnen. Chael Sonnen, we are live. We are face-to-face, my guy. It's never better than that.
How are you, brother?
Hey, it's fun, dog. You know I love it. You love when I call you dog. Chael loves when I call him dog. It makes him feel cool. Chael, but you know what feels cool? Being in Las Vegas for UFC 300. Dude, it's been amazing to be here, feel the excitement, feel the fans, and just know that we are on the verge of something that we have never experienced before, because there's never been an event like UFC 300.
Dan, and I got to tell you, I mean, let's just speak about Dana White real fast, okay? This is a street kid from Boston at 32 years old. He has an idea. He's going to come to Vegas, partner up with some money, and start something called the UFC, and now here we are. We're set up on the campus, T-Mobile behind us, the worldwide leader in front of us, the greatest audience out there. And Dan, I've got to tell you, one thing keeps Dana White's little idea above float, and that is anticipation. If you don't have anticipation, you don't have a business. It's what so many other promoters failed to have, and it made Dana stand apart. But I bring that to you because, partner, I am counting down the seconds. I cannot believe what we're going to see. I will be there for the first fight. They call it jerking the curtain at 3:30. Jerking the curtain is going to be Rajic and Prohaska. Excuse me. Prohaska was just headlining Madison Square Garden 5 months ago. That's how special 300 is.
Yeah, it is a phenomenal fight card, headlined by so many great fighters. You got former champions littered across the fight card from the first prelim to the last prelim all the way to the main event. But we are talking about Pineda versus Hill. You got the light heavyweight championship. They end the night. Then Zhang Weili takes on Yao Shaonan. You got the people's main event, Justin Gaethje and Max Holloway. The main card starts with Bo Nickel taking on Cody Brundage, a guy that is supposed to be able to challenge him in the wrestling. But then when we get to the prelims, Uncle Chael, it is still just as good. The fight night starts with former champions Davison Figueiredo taking on Cody Garbrandt. The prelims end with Alexander Rakic taking on Jiří Procházka. Kayla Harrison also makes her UFC debut against the former champion Holly Holm. But ultimately, we are all here in Las Vegas to watch the two best light heavyweights in the world fight each other. The former champion Jamahal Hill, who did not lose his title, challenges Alex Pereira, who has looked like a world beater in a very short period of time.
Well, it's a big deal to hear that compliment from you, because you, I think, get remembered as a heavyweight more, but you were also the light heavyweight world champion. I just got to tell you, when you know a division, there is something on this. And by the way, the story's getting a little bit off track. This is all about Jamahal Hill returning for the championship that he never lost. That's a beautiful headline. I appreciate that. But the story of martial arts says, if you beat the master, you got to face the student. When the Gracies brought this sport here from Brazil, you could do something called a Gracie Challenge. But before you got to Hoyser Hickson, you had to go through their top students first. I'm telling you that because Pereira was in the corner of Glover Teixeira. He was his training partner. He was his corner man. Glover is his mentor, and he watched Jamahal take Glover apart. Now, I've worked out with Glover, and I can tell you how fantastic he is, which is what makes me have an extra respect on a personal level for Jamahal Hill. But this fight isn't about a choice. This isn't about maybe Dana will make the fight. The history of martial arts says you beat the master, you face the student. These two have to fight.
And a lot of times the student proves to be tougher than the master was, because they carry that chip of the expectation that their guy was supposed to get it done on that night. And that's exactly what Alex Pereira does. I remember sitting octagon side when Glover Teixeira got beat by Jamahal Hill in Brazil. And I looked at Alex Pereira's face. He looked like he wanted to kill him. He looked like he wanted to eat him. And Jamahal Hill was none the wiser. He had became the world champion and didn't realize that the guy standing across the octagon was the guy that was going to be the one that he had to wrest the championship back from. He didn't know, but he is up for it. And when I sat down with Jamahal earlier in the week, he told me, it's the excitement of the fight, but it's the excitement of getting back to the championship. He goes, people don't understand what it is like to lose that, especially in that way. He goes, that's why I held on to it so long. He goes, most will just say, I am walking away from the belt because I'm injured. He said, I held on to it until those guys started the fight because I wanted to be the champ. He said, I live to be the champ. I love being the champion, all the things that come with being the champion. It's a massive fight. This is the fight that should be headlining this card. I couldn't be more excited.
I got some inside scoop, by the way. So I'm a little
concerned. You always do.
Yeah, you're going to love this. I got a little concerned that Jamal, with timing and conditioning, that's what happens when a guy's removed, guy has an injury. And this fight got put together pretty fast. Last night, Lionheart, Anthony Smith, I worked with him an hour ago before you got here, DC. Last night, Anthony Smith was at the PI. He gets pulled into a workout with Jamal. And Jamal already been out there. He was all sweaty. He was doing mitts and everything else. Anthony gets pulled into a workout. It turns into a 5-round sparring session. Yes, and a lot of guys are doing that now. The first time I heard about this was Paulo Costa. He sparred the week of his fight with Whitaker. It's kind of new. And as much of a surprise as it is, Anthony said when he was done sparring Jamal Hill that Max Holloway went out and sparred 5 full rounds himself on fight week. And this is a big concern. You get a cut. Guys are tired. They're cutting weight. But I bring that to you because if Jamal was able to go 5 full rounds with Anthony while he has no carbs, while he is depleting his body, it does answer my question about cardio. Apparently, he can check that box. Apparently, he has stayed in shape. And I want you to know that before you give a prediction. I think that what I just told you might influence
I'm not making a prediction. See, that's why I'm lucky, right? So guys don't hate me because I don't have to predict the fights because I call the fights. You guys get all the flack on that,
now
right?
Now I know.
And that's why I got the title of good guy because the fighters don't hate me like they hate you guys because they always make you pick. But here's the deal. A year ago this week, we're playing basketball, guys. We're out on the court. It's me, a whole bunch of other fighters. We started this thing on International Fight Week. Well, we play basketball for money. It was $2,000. Jamal Hill hurts himself.
Yep.
When he went down, Chael, it was so scary. He's laying on the ground there. Look at him grabbing his Achilles.
Yep.
He knew it immediately. He tried to come back in the game. He is so tough that he didn't want to stop playing. Now, granted, we had no idea that the injury was that severe, but it lends to this question.
Yep.
9 months, for as long as we have known, for as long as doctors have done the surgery, as long as sports have been happening, it's a year off after an Achilles. How worrisome is that?
It's a concern for me, and it's only a concern in terms of what has he been doing in the meanwhile. Like, some fighters have a hard time getting motivation up when they don't have a bout agreement signed. It's very normal. You're one type or you're the other, and I only share with you, it's not an option when you have an Achilles hurt. What you are able to do to go find a machine where you're just working your arms or you're moving some dumbbells, it's just different. It's no longer an option. So when this fight got put together and it was so quick, all I can do is all the UFC could do, which is to take Jamal at his word. Jamal,
yep.
Can you do this? Are you ready? Can you make the weight? Can you have the camp? Are you prepared? He said yes to everything and was excited about it. Daniel, I have to trust him. I have no other choice.
You know, he didn't know that this was happening early. He said it was in the recovery, in his rehab, in his... See, they were going to do this in Brazil next month, another month for him to get ready and prepared and be healthy. But he said when he was going through the rehab process, he was so far ahead of the cues that they set in front of him that he was like, wait a minute, I can do this earlier. He goes, I've been jumping. I've been running. I've been wrestling. I've been grappling way quicker than I was supposed to. Why should I not be fighting for a championship that I long for? This is something that motivates me to the point that I'm ready to do anything. And he feels like he matches up extremely well against the champion, Alex Pereira, as many do. Because we still know, both of us do, that Alex Pereira does lack a little bit of the wrestling, which Jamal said he does not intend to test. To me, I think that's a mistake, but we will see what happens come Saturday night. But Chael, before Jamal Hill and Alex walk to the octagon, we got another title fight. All China, right? Could you imagine the pride that this country feels right now having Yao Shaonan challenge Zhang Weili for the UFC flyweight, strawweight championship? Right? These two women are so good at what they do. They're both so well-rounded, so skilled. But when I look at Yao Shaonan, I wonder, is she aware of the challenge ahead of her? Because the last time we saw Zhang Weili, she looked phenomenal in putting on a performance that has not been topped by many inside the octagon, man or woman, since that performance that she had.
And Daniel, let me respond to you by just using a very current example, okay? On this card, known as 300, on the main card alone, we have four guys between Sarukian, Charles Oliveira, between Gaethje, between Holloway, that are all making arguments that with a victory, they should get to go on and fight for the world championship. And you know what? It makes sense when every one of them says it. You stand back and go, that sounds right to me. That sounds right to me. I use it as an example because there is nobody that is saying our number one contender should not be facing facing Wei Li for the championship. Everybody within that strawweight division stood back. They understood these girls have to fight. This is the match, the rightful match. And one thing that our challenger has is power. But I will just submit for you one thing, which is that power was a surprise. It is no longer a surprise. We have all seen it. Wei Li knows what to watch out for. When the mask comes off and you have a revelation like this, I think you're going to see Wei Li at her best.
Yeah, and you know, the last person that Wei Li fought was supposed to present power problems in Amanda Lemos. It was a wipeout. It was one of the most impressive performances I have seen, from the wrestling to the pace and the pressure, the cardio, the striking. She is a beast, man. And you know, when we first started watching Zhang Wei Li, we saw her lose a fight to Rose Namajunas twice, right? We saw her get knocked out. We thought it was a bit of a one-off. Then Rose Namajunas beats her by decision. And you wonder whether or not Zhang Wei Li will ever reach the potential that she seemed to have. But then everything came together. In the Carla Esparza fight, it was a wipeout. And then the next fight, it was a wipeout. It seems as though she is now the woman today that we all predicted she would be a long time ago. And for me, that is a very dangerous proposition for anybody challenging for that belt. Now, Yao Xiaonan is very familiar with her. They're both Chinese. They both had the same strength coach way back in the day. She told me yesterday, our careers have been parallel. They've never crossed. But we always knew that as we were running side by side, you always take a peek to the left and you always see that person. You know that at some point you will be matched up. And it's better that it's for the UFC championship.
Yes, I feel that Yao, and I have to go back to this because it was such a surprise. I remember when Cheetah first started fighting. Nobody wanted to fight him, and you had to have some tape on him. It's like, oh, my goodness, this is such a puzzle. But over time, there was some tape. And there's a reason that back at the turn of the century in the 1900s, the heavyweight boxing champion would have that belt for 10 years because you couldn't actually watch him.
Yep.
You had to watch him by listening to something called a transistor radio. Once you got footage, once you could start to scout people. And I only offer you that in that Wei Li will not be surprised as so many others were. This is a great fight. This can go either way. I think you're getting the sense that I'm leaning towards Wei Li, but I just want you to know we're going to see something new. We're going to see a different strategy by both of them. They have to present something new because they do know each other so well.
I just wonder who is going to fall victim to that pay-per-view curse. There's always somebody that we expect to win. So going away gets beat. I kind of wonder who it's going to be this weekend, especially when you have these types of matchups. Now, before that, you got the people's main event. Max Holloway will challenge Justin Gaethje for the BMF title. Chael, look at this. Gaethje has 12 performance awards. Max has 11. Gaethje has 19 knockouts. These guys are two of the most exciting and violent fighters in the entire UFC. What do you make of this fight, Chael, and how do you contain yourself? Whenever we're doing the research for this and we're doing the footage, this is not a job. You want to watch Max Holloway and Justin Gaethje fight on repeat. That's exactly what we get to do when these two walk into the octagon this weekend.
I love how you said that, partner. And before this fight was announced, it was rumored. And when it was rumored, the sports books around town started to carry odds, and they had Gaethje as the favorite. Gaethje has remained the favorite. But right when that happened, I'm getting on a plane personally coming out to join you in Miami for something called UFC 299. And Daniel, it was almost like a nervous tick where each time I'd see a fighter in the back, I would say to him, hey, what do you think of this Gaethje and Holloway fight? For whatever reason, that was my go-to.
You didn't know
hi, hello.
You didn't know what you wanted to say to him, so you kind of say, oh, I know they'll like that.
And you want to know something, DC? All 11 guys that I asked, all 11, went with Holloway.
Wow.
The fighters, the boys in the locker room. And of course, I got the niceties. Oh, that Gaethje, he's so good. He's so exciting. But they all maintain the same thing. This was separate conversations. They maintain that Justin Gaethje will wear down somewhere in the third, and that Max Holloway, unlike so many other victims of Gaethje, will still be standing and pull away in the fourth and the fifth. I then talked to Ian Parker, who is very good at this. He's the gambling expert over at ESPN. He acknowledged that Gaethje was a 2-1 favorite at the time, but he also was picking Max Holloway. So it made me stand back and start to reassess that. Max went to 55 one time, and it was against Poirier, which is a common opponent, and it wasn't ultra competitive. And Poirier felt, and he maintains to this day, that he knew a rhythm. He found an inside strategy. He refused to tell anybody what it was, but that he and his camp identified it, went out and implemented it in that fight. I offer you that because it was rhythm and it was technical. Two things that Justin Gaethje is not. He is brute force at all times. It's a very different matchup than the first time Max tried at 55. I like the proposition.
I just think that Justin Gaethje before was that guy. I don't think he's that guy today. I think he's more refined. And when you watch him compete, you watch him against Fazeev. You saw him a little bit more of the matador. Then I think you saw that style come full circle when he fought Dustin Poirier the second time. The first time he fought Dustin Poirier, he was so aggressive that he put himself in trouble. Second time, he was backing up. He was fighting behind the jab. He was taking his time. I don't know if that's the style, though, that is conducive to you finding success against Max Holloway. Because if you're backing up, Max Holloway will overwhelm you with his volume. He's so good at not really putting himself in danger, but also taking risk. So he'll get in range. He'll land 3, 4, 5 punches. Then he will extend that combination before you can return, get back to safety, and then he starts to do the whole song and dance again. Justin Gaethje will need to find that rhythm like Dustin Poirier said he did before, interrupt that rhythm, but then also make sure that he's fighting at his range, at his pace, and not getting overwhelmed. It's a very interesting fight. It's much closer than people give it credit for, and also because Max Holloway this time had a full fight camp, he always makes this joke. When he fought Dustin Poirier, his manager, Tim, called him Muffin Top Max because he had a little bit of fat off the side of his shorts because he took the fight on 4 weeks' notice and he just put on fat. He said this time he's put on muscle, he's more prepared, and it will show in the octagon. Arman Tsarukyan, I'm sorry, as we look at Max Holloway, I went long on Max. You know, I love the Blessed Express.
A great one.
Who's also getting his own fight shorts custom this weekend to fight Justin Gaethje. This fight is phenomenal, man. And with a real 155-pound Max Holloway, it makes it even more competitive. Chill. Arman Tsarukyan said he's knocking out Charles Oliveira. I don't know that I've ever heard anyone as sure that they're going to beat one of the greatest lightweights of this era like I've heard in Arman Tsarukyan. Is this guy being too much? Is he overstating his expectation? Or do you believe that he really feels he's going to do something to Oliveira that has not been done in so long?
Well, I can only tell you his own words. And Arman came out and did an interview and said, look, I'm just trying to hype this fight. Now, I got to tell you, as a guy that used to really enjoy hyping fights, but I got to tell you, Daniel, when you come out and you admit that you're doing it, or you admit I'm just trying to take somebody's money, I don't actually mean these things, in all fairness, it brings it down a little bit. But I give Sakarian some grace here because he was speaking of a standpoint of, I'm a one-man band. I'm not getting anything back from Charles Oliveira. So he
Charles
started
doesn't have
turning
to.
It up.
But sure. Charles doesn't have to. Charles does it with his performances, right? That's Charles Oliveira. I need to build fight.
I don't disagree with you. Let me give you an example, and you'll be able to relate this because I believe you were in the corner of Cain Velasquez when he surprisingly lost to Fabricio Verdum. But The one thing that Verdum did to everybody, including Cain, and I bring this to you because it's the same strategy that Charles has, he will be reckless and careless on his feet, which also means he's dangerous because he truly does not care if the fight goes to the ground. Now, a lot of guys will say that, but it's a very few guys all the way back to 1993 that have come along in this sport and really did not care if they were taken down. Charles is of that mindset. And when I talk about reckless, that might sound like not a compliment, but reckless is dangerous.
That's dangerous.
Something Sakarian's going to have to deal with.
Yeah, and you know what the worst thing about Charles Oliveira? It's almost like a glitch or a gimmick. It's like when you play video games, right? I play UFC 5. It's my favorite game. You play with Max Holloway. The dude is like overpowered, like nobody on the game. He wins all the time. Charles Oliveira has this gimmick. Charles Oliveira has this special power that when you... If you and I are fighting, chill, and you knock me down, you are not thinking twice about jumping on me, punching me to get me out of there. Oliveira is so dangerous that we have seen time and time again, Justin Gaethje, Michael Chandler, Dustin Poirier, they drop him, and you wonder, do I follow this guy to the ground? So then he gets a 10-second count. He's getting a boxing count to recover. Nobody else gets that. And in that moment, he lays on his back, puts his feet up, and he says, come on. Come on, but the whole time, he's clearing the cobwebs. And then when he stands back up, he immediately starts to press you again. It's his pace, it's his pressure, but it's also his the way he presents himself. It's like his presence is a lot. Charles Oliveira is big. He's tall. He's not afraid. You can hit him and he just stays in your face. I saw him do it. Dude, he broke Dustin Poirier down by just walking after him and kneeing him. And then he would elbow him. And Dustin would club him upside the head. And Charles would knee him. And then all of a sudden, Dustin falls to the ground and gets choked out. That's Charles Oliveira in a nutshell. Arman Tsarukyan, I don't know if he has ever experienced anything like that. And I think he's not valuing it at the level that he should or respecting it at the level that he should. We have seen time and time again. These young guys get the chance to fight in the top five. They failed. Tsarukyan says, though, he had an opportunity against Dariush. He already did it. So this is familiar to him. and he will not be overwhelmed by the moment.
I love your Darush example. I mean, I'll see you, Bobby Green, and I'll raise you in Islam Makhachev. And I only say that because Armand's been in there. A lot of people aren't familiar with him. Even the fight that he had with Makhachev was before Makhachev was quite a champion. It wasn't on pay-per-view. It wasn't the featured main event. And I tell you this because if you look at everything that Sarukian is up against, there's a lot of pressure. You got 300. You got a number one contendership. You got a former world champion. But you know what? The placement of the card is very helpful. He doesn't have a ton of pressure on him, partner. He doesn't have to worry about championship rounds, just by example. It's a lot less of
an
ask.
He said he wanted that. I would have preferred five rounds.
Championship, smart of him to say. But yeah. I will offer you this one thing. Little piece of inside baseball. We'll see how it works out. But right now, with Team Oliveira, their biggest concern is not Saturday. They got one opponent first, and this opponent's beat them before several times, and that is the scale.
Yes.
And right now, they're getting some weight off, and they are a little bit worried about their athlete.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Well, it's a very big deal because people are talking about a number one
contendership. Remember, he lost the belt for it. Remember, he lost the belt because he didn't make the weight down in Arizona against Gaethje.
This is arguably a number one contendership match. And just to remind you, Dana White will not allow you to fight for the title next off of previously missing the weight class. So it could have some implication.
That's a whole nother factor into this fight, which is already tremendous. Guys, look, last time we were outside, I squint a lot. I can't see. I don't wear glasses like Uncle Chael. We're both sweating profusely, so you better respect the effort and the commitment that we have to bringing you guys this show. It is hot out here. You know, Chael, when it's going to be hot, though, in the octagon, Cody Brundage is fighting Bo Nickel. Let me ask you a question, Chael.
I have something. Go ahead, but I have something.
25-1, uh-huh. Chael. Bo Nickel's the favorite.
Uh-huh.
What does that say to you, though? Is it a bit of a put-off for a guy who, in Bo Nickel, says, Hamza Chimaev and I will be the fight, but then he's fighting a guy where he's a 25-1 favorite?
Roughly an hour ago, I was sitting right here in this seat. It was before you were here.
Uh-huh.
Anthony Smith, who's a training partner of Cody Gumbridge, by the way, but he's sitting up here. Cody gets out of a car. He comes running over. He was not invited. He was not supposed to be here. He was passing by. He saw us. He has the car pull over. He comes over on set right here, and he begins to yell at me. Because
what?
I have mispronounced his name in the past, and he says, you owe it to me to know how to say Gumbridge. I said, excuse me.
It's not Gumbridge.
What is it? No, come on.
You called
Cody. It's Cody. I know. No. I'm not trying to be funny.
He's
what is
mad.
It? How do you say
He's
it?
He's mad that you're saying his name wrong. But
how
you
do
come
you say
back
it?
Up? Cody Brundage.
Brundage. And I said to him, Cody, I was performing. I know how to say Brundage. And guess what? When he left, Anthony Smith says to me, he works out with him. Anthony said, Brundage is the hardest live go in sparring that he personally has to deal with. I said, wait a minute. Are you telling me that Brundage is a live dog in this fight? He said, yes. I said, man, he's got a 500 record. What are you talking about against Bo Nickel? He said, man, he's tough. He can defend himself. He's not scared. He's got no problem making the weight class. He's in shape. I mean, he just starts checking some boxes. I thought I would bring it to you. And by the way, I know how to say Brundage.
No, you're, I know.
Somebody
I
was
love
tricking
that you
me.
Say that. But let me say this, though. Anthony's his training partner.
Sure.
Now, granted, I'm not picking fights because I'm not allowed to.
Yep.
But at 25-1, it tells you what the world thinks.
Sure.
And a lot of times, those people that set those lines understand what's going to happen. I'll tell you, let me lend this one to you. I was fighting Dan Henderson. They instilled me as a 12-1 favorite. I wasn't sure that I was a 12-1 favorite over Dan Henderson because of the respect I had for him and all the things that he'd accomplished. When we got into the octagon and started fighting, I realized I was a 12-1 favorite. They just knew something that I didn't because they went inside the numbers, they went inside the fight, and they recognized he's a younger, same type of fighter that will be a problem for him. Same thing. There are a lot of things in this fight where you can point to and go, wow, this seems to be to Bo Nickel's benefit. Jacob Malkoon was able to take him down multiple times, and he ultimately lost because he got disqualified.
Sure.
That would seem to lend itself to Bo Nickel having the advantage. I don't know if Cody Brundage is going to pull off the upset, but if he does, it will go down as one of the biggest upsets in oh wow moments that we have experienced in the UFC because I don't know what his plan should be to get the job done because he ain't going to out-wrestle him, and that's his greatest skill.
Yep. anti-wrestling. I mean, for one, to not to out-wrestle, but to not be out-wrestled by him. Keep it on your feet. So we go. I mean, it's got to be the game plan. We got to be real close making a guess like that. You know, I love the example that you gave of your fight with Dan Henderson, but that was not a commentary on Dan. It was a commentary on the potential of DC. And I only have to offer that.
I understand.
I thought we
and
were
that's
trying
what
to
this
get
is.
Yeah, but I didn't know that. I thought we were getting a commentary on Cody that Bo's on his way up and Cody doesn't belong here. But according to Anthony, it's not quite like that. He said, actually, you know, Brundage took this real serious season shape. I just want to offer that to you because, yeah. Daniel, there's a reason they're on the main card, and I don't know what it is. I got to know everything. I can't figure that one out, but there is a reason, and we are going to know it by the time this is done.
Because of Bo Nickel.
But what
he's
about
excited.
Bo Nickel? They're going to put him into a title fight?
No, he's not getting a title fight, but he's exciting. I mean,
sure.
He's a good-looking
kid. So's Garbrandt.
Yeah, but he's
so's Holly Holm.
Yeah, but he's a good-looking kid. He's undefeated. He's an NCAA champion wrestler. He seems to have the pedigree to go far in a weight class that you need guys like that.
Yeah.
Right?
National champion, they call him. Never beat me.
We love. Weird. Never beat you.
What's weird?
It's really crazy.
I'm from the nation, too.
It's crazy how they continue to give these guys all their props when they aren't going through you.
Three times they gave him the championship.
That's so crazy.
I'm standing right there.
I know, Jay.
Never even taken down by him.
But these guys.
It's true.
The UFC understands what they have in Bo Nickel. But we have seen it before. Hey, very recently, we watched. And I'm not comparing Brundage to Jack Hermanson.
Sure.
Because we saw Jack Hermanson take out Joe Pyfer.
Yep.
Right? It's about the step up in competition. For me, it's about the odds. I believe that it's time for Bo Nickel to step up and be in a fight where it's not 25-1, or it's 2-1,
yep.
Or it's 1.5-1, or it's even. That's what I want to see in the evolution of Bo Nickel. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
We get to the prelims. We got the number one contender fight in the light heavyweight division as the final prelim of the night. That speaks to the depth of the card. But when Alexander Rakic takes on Jiří Procházka, it's a moment chill for him to finally come into his own and be the guy that so many have expected for so long. What's taken Rakic so long to show that he belongs? Granted, he lost the last fight now. He said that he didn't, he hurt himself. He said he was going to beat Jan Błachowicz, but he got hurt. This is a massive opportunity, though. He got an actual step up in competition after losing to Jan Błachowicz. How does he become the guy?
This is a confusing one. You have number six versus number two. Jiří Procházka was just the world champion. Jiří Procházka is such a puzzle and such a pain for everybody, but people are believing that number six, Rajcik, is going to overcome number two. And the reason I tell you that is Rajcik's been out for a period of time, DC. Not to mention, when he was out, the last time I saw him, he weighed 242 pounds. He was planning to come back at heavyweight. So then he announces his comeback. It's 3 months ahead of schedule. Oh, and by the way, he's returning to 205. There's just so many moving parts that I would understand where Procházka would be the favorite. But people are talking, and they're taking Rajcik, man. They believe in him as much as you do, and I am wide open to the idea. We do have the return of Rajcik. At a minimum, I can word it like that.
Yeah, he's tough, man. He's so tough, and he's so good, and he seems to have all the skills, but it just does not come together for him. When speaking to him the other day, he said, I am certain that I'm going to get the job done. I am certain. I am ready. He said this is 4 ACL surgeries. Wow. He said he's hurt the right knee. That was the left knee. But in this recovery, he found something within himself that will let him be the guy that so many has expected for him to be for so long. I can't wait for that fight. And I believe he has to be a little more aggressive. Him and I have not had any issues. But one of my biggest concerns or gripes about Alexander Rakic is at times he can be a bit too patient. If he's more aggressive, he takes more chances and he can get through Jiří Procházka in impressive fashion. It don't matter what happened in the last fight. He will find himself on a short list to fight for a UFC championship. This fight is going to be fantastic. I can't wait for it. Every single fight is going to be fantastic, and I can't wait for them. But Calvin Kattar and Aljamain Sterling.
Come on.
I mean, Calvin Kattar has long been one of the better featherweights in the world. Aljo has now decided to go up from bantamweight. He said the weight cut had become too much. He's excited. He weighed 156 pounds yesterday, feeling fresh, ready to go get the weight off. Jail, you said this is the most exciting prelim for you. Why is that?
We're going to see Aljo fight at his absolute best. One thing that Aljo doesn't know, he's even going to surprise himself and go, my goodness, why didn't I do this sooner? Going up to 145 pounds, not having to deal with that awful opponent, and nobody really sees how hard the strategies and the life changes, physiology, calories in, calories out, it is to beat the scale the day before. For the first time ever, Aljo could put all of his focus, and this is a very dedicated and very hard worker, I should tell you, but he could put all of that hard work and dedication into the fight, into the strategies in improving his skills, as opposed to having to save some energy to get that extra jog in on the treadmill,
yep,
to put your gear on and ride that Aerodyne to burn some of those calories to get 135. He's going to be faster than ever. He's returning to 3-round fights, which for a guy that's been in the 5-round club as many times as he has is like a day off. Now, he's got a very hard opponent in Calvin Kattar, but I am suggesting for you, win or lose, Aljo is going to put on a performance that's going to be very memorable.
Yeah, absolutely. And Aljamain Sterling feels like he's not in fat camp right now. It's not 2 weeks of just weight cutting and not worrying about the strategy and the preparation for the fight. But Calvin Kattar feels like this is the ideal matchup for him because he feels that he's been in this weight class. He's fought the best of the best. And Aljamain Sterling really does not compare to them. He's been in there with Max Holloway. He's been in there with Brian Ortega. He's been in there with the best. And he's like, I am just too much for a guy coming up from the weight class below. There's some pride in that.
Yep.
There's pride in saying, this is my weight class. You don't belong. I'm not going to allow for you to come up here and make a name off of my back. Now, the fight right before that, Chael, you have a fighter going down the weight class as Kayla Harrison makes her UFC debut. Best judoka we've ever seen in the UFC. Granted, Ronda Rousey was great. Kayla's a 2-time Olympic champion. Best female boxer we've ever seen in Holly Holm. Boxing world champion. Dude, what does that say in terms of the UFC, Chael? That they give Kayla Harrison, the UFC champion, in her first outing.
This is so awesome. I can't even tell you. This is the third fight of the night. What a joke that is going to be. You talk about world champions and how great that's going to be. You talk about Olympic champions, how great that is. There's one thing in our industry that is higher, and there's only one thing, and that's a Hall of Fame, which is exactly where Holly is guaranteed to be someday. I have to tell you, 135 pounds for Kayla Harrison. I'm going to use a quote from Kayla, and Kayla said, the last time I weighed 145 pounds, I was 17-year-old junior in high school. Okay, she has actually made that one time over at Invicta after that statement, but now she's going to be at 135. We're going to see a different Kayla. For better or worse, that we're going to get the answer to that, but we're at least going to see a different Kayla. And Fighters don't generally, historically speaking, have their best performance their first time in the octagon. It doesn't matter if it was Wanderlei Silva that was the Pride champion, Hector Lombard that had won 22 straight matches. Generally, their first time over.
I fought like trash when I got to the UFC.
It's not necessarily the outcome, but the performance.
All I did was hug Frank Mir because I was so damn terrified about what might happen if I gave him space to actually fight me. I got really good in that fight at not fighting.
Sure.
I was like, I'm going to fight. I'm here fighting. Mm-hmm. But I'm not fighting. I'm trying to keep my zero next to my name.
Eddie Alvarez was stopped in his first UFC fight. He then became the world champion. I'm only saying that I don't expect Kayla to have her best performance, and I think it's relevant if you're picking fights.
And if she doesn't, she has a real fighter in Holly Holm. Look, Kayla Harrison has told everyone, Holly Holm has gotten really good at making sounds, moving around the octagon, fighting a really slow, measured pace, but not actually fighting.
She say that, making sounds?
Yeah, it's what she does. Yes.
No Holly, way. She called it
jabs,
out?
With the jabs and the movement.
That's a great line.
Dude, it's great. And Kayla Harrison is not one to hold her tongue. I always told Kayla, talk your talk, champ. Don't be afraid to say what you feel. Kayla Harrison is not afraid to say what she feel. Chael, Sadiq Youssef is fighting Diego Lopez. Man, that's a fight. Yep. I mean, Diego Lopez, I don't know that a kid has made a turnaround in his career and garnered more hype and deserving hype than Diego Lopez in a short period of time. And he gets a matchup that promises to be explosive because Sadiq Youssef is looking to take your head off, too.
I love everything you just said about Lopez. I would take those exact words, except I would have applied them. I would have. I mean, that's really the way that I see him. He's very explosive. Like, if I had to look at one fight, you go, okay, Chael, here's your job. You got to tell us as an analyst and expert, what fight can you guarantee isn't going to go to the distance? Guarantee's a big word, partner, but that's the one that I put the asterisk by. These guys are going to come out, do the same thing to each other. One of them's going to land first, and it's going to be a wrap.
You know, that fight will be explosive, as I said. Both of these guys are fun, they're experienced, and they'll have a great time. But they aren't the only ones. For as fun as they are, they have very limited credentials compared to the people on the early prelims. Yeah. Bro, we're talking about the early prelims. What in the world? You know, Allen Iverson said, we're talking about practice. We're talking about the early prelims. And you know why? They're that good. Throw up that full screen, guys. That's a board, right? We put a board where you see all the fights. There it is. It rolls right on cue. You got Renato Moicano. Money Moicano takes on Jalen Turner. You remember what Jalen Turner just did to Bobby Green? It was nasty. Marina Rodriguez takes on Jessica Andrade. Davison Figueiredo and Cody Garbrandt open the card. But, Chael, before we go to the next thing on the show, let's give Jim Miller his flowers. Because this dude fought at UFC 100. He fought at UFC 200. And now he's fighting at UFC 300 against Bobby Green. They call him Jim Beep Miller. Because this dude just don't care. He's 40-something years old. And he's fighting better than he ever has.
Daniel, I met Jim Miller in the octagon at UFC 98 after I competed against his younger brother, Dan, who, by the way, had a great career. He was an IFL champion. But Dan fought long enough. He couldn't fight anymore. Yeah. Right? He came to the end of the road, and that was about a decade ago. That's the younger brother.
And Jim had Lyme's disease, all kinds of other stuff over his career.
He's still around. Daniel, they say, some jerk's trying to sell a book on Amazon for $10, and he will tell you that you can't do anything until you believe it. You cannot achieve until you conceive. I'll tell you all these things.
Luke said that one time. It was just ridiculous.
Michael Bisping called him out for it. You remember that. But Daniel, my point is, I think that Jim Miller has gone further than he thought he was going to go.
Yes.
I think that Jim Miller has over-exceeded his own expectations. I think Jim Miller a number of times has looked around and been a little bit confused. He's not only beating guys, he's finishing guys. I fought on the same card as Jim Miller. Okay, I meet him at UFC 98. Fast forward, it's a debut of a network. And Jim Miller fought on that card. I competed with Shogun. Conor McGregor was on the card. Just a name drop for you. But Jim Miller was there and defeated Charles Oliveira that night.
Yeah.
And here they still are, together on the same card. Oliveira surpassed him a little bit, but Miller, hey, this could be his moment, possibly his walk-away moment. Just like Cody Rhodes, he's going to finish the story his way.
He's not walking away. He said that if he gets to a point where he's done 50 UFC fights, he promised me he would walk away, but he said at the rate that he's fighting today, he don't know when the end is for Jim Miller. But now it's time. Da-na-na. I start shadow boxing.
Na-na-na-na.
It's time for five rounds, baby.
Hey!
With DC and Chael. Round one, Chael. Who's got the best custom shorts? Granted, listen, I have my own take on this. I was the one that designed Max Holloway's. But when you look at the custom shorts, we got the best ones for you.
All right. Now, I am just too damn macho to be wearing somebody else's shorts, but there was a time. You remember Kenny Monday? I used to wear the Kenny Monday singlet, and that was one that was long down here. It came up over the top, and I'm only sharing that because you feel something. You feel something when it's your guy, but I've got to give the award, if you're talking just from an artistic standpoint, to that man. Oh, he was just up a minute ago. Alex Pereira. Those and the color combination are my favorite.
Yeah, that was a phenomenal fight short by Alex Pereira. I didn't quite understand it. I don't know what Gaethje's fight shorts are, Chael, if I'm being honest. They look like they're normal black Venom shorts, but maybe there's something in the short that I am just not picking up on.
Can we buy them, by the way?
I don't know. I think
that's why I don't know either.
If I'm the UFC, I'm making those one of one.
Right.
Only Max Holloway gets to wear those. I got to go with Max Holloway's because you got the white, you got the floral. Plus, I also know the story behind it. Max goes, they told him, call me by end of day with a design, Max. Max goes, we already had something in the tube, so we sent it out to him. Max Holloway says he has to represent the island. He's for the island. He's from the island. And now it shows in his fight show.
All right, I love it. Now, you got to get your crystal ball out, but when this is all over, I want you to finish this statement. The performance of the night goes to...
God, that was a tough one. The performance of the night goes to... The fight of the night goes to Justin Gaethje and Max Holloway. I'm a politician, Chael.
Sure.
I don't like making enemies. That's why I don't pick fights. But I think a performance bonus will come out of that fight. There will be so many explosive fights on that night that on the night when everybody shines, two people are going to shine the brightest. That will be the Blessed Express, Max Holloway. And that will be your favorite fighter, Justin Gaethje.
Okay, and I'm going to answer a little bit different. I think the one that is primed for an upset, and all upsets through history, you go to Mike Tyson versus Buster Douglas or the time that Michael Phelps got outswam by a single stroke, but the athlete finds himself in a match that's harder than they thought it was going to be. It's as simple as that. I think that Holly Holm is in a perfect position to keep the distance. And listen, little insider baseball, she's worked very diligently with John Jones, coming up with strategy, managing that distance. Nobody did it better than Bones Jones. And I got to tell you, I think she has what it takes, and she's already proven to me once before that she can overcome the odds.
Yeah, she's been in this situation before. Chael, round three, the call out. Oh, we love a good call out. You and I both, we've done it better than anybody in UFC history. But who has the best one with a win on Saturday night? That's your prediction. Who do you think grabs that mic from Rogan and says something so memorable that they'll be in a title fight the next time we see him?
Sarkarian understands that this game is being played, and he also understands Sarukian rather, but he also understands that 45 minutes later, either Max or Gaethje is going to have that same argument should they choose to take it. I think that he will be prepared. I don't think that Charles Oliveira would, just to answer it in reverse, but it does appear... Hasn't been made official, but it does appear that our number one contender for Islam is coming out of 155 Saturday, and it's between those two matchups.
You know, I love that, Chael, but I got to go in a different direction because I know that right now, when you can get the champion talking about you before the fight, you got something. I think it belongs to Kayla Harrison. If Kayla Harrison can get past Holly Holm, she will be so disrespectful to Raquel Pennington that by Monday, when we do this show, it's all we're going to talk about. Kayla Harrison, how much bravado she showed.
She's in a position.
How powerful she was in
Good
her
point.
Convictions, how she felt she was going to get it done. And she already got the champ talking about her.
Yep.
She said if Raquel did more, they wouldn't be worrying about a girl making her UFC debut. They'd be talking about the champ.
Yes, I very much like that deduction. Now, I've got to ask you, and Daniel, this is what we call the stall, because I know we've got two left, and I've got it roughly in my mind, and I'm hoping somebody just tips me
right
off just
now,
a little
they're
bit.
Tell
but
you.
Is this BMF title fight going to be better than the last one? And a reminder, the last one was Gaethje versus Poirier.
I think this is going to be the best BMF title fight of all time.
Okay.
Because I think this is going to be a long BMF title fight. What we have not got from the BMF title to this point is a long, drawn-out affair. If you remember the first fight, Jorge Masvidal put it on Nate Diaz. It was very one-sided. Nate was cut. The fight ended early. In the second BMF title fight, Justin Gaethje got Dustin Poirier done in the second round. I think this fight will be a long fight. And I believe because it's a long fight with these two competitors, it'll be the best one that we've ever seen.
And what a difference a day makes. Max Holloway was the odd man out. They didn't know what to do with him at 145. If you wanted to make a number one contender at 145, here's a plan. Don't put him against Max. In fact, that's exactly how Ilya Topuria even got to the title shot. He's the first guy in a long time to avoid Max. And I tell you that because they move him up to 55. All of a sudden, he's in a title fight. Oh, by the way, all of a sudden, with a changing in the divisions, he could win. I'm talking about Max. He could win, stay at 55, make a good argument for a title shot. shot, drop back down and be the one to take on Topuria. And meanwhile, I think Justin Gaethje has the absolute most to lose. At this age, if he goes down, there is not a path back to a title fight.
Chael, the fight of the night goes to who?
It's going to be Gaethje and Max.
It is, right? Like, yeah. I mean, what are we doing five rounds? I mean,
and they the fight got stopped.
The fight got stopped in the fourth.
And that's the thing.
If that's the fifth round question, fight's over.
Yep. And you know what? But that's the one thing that they have as an advantage. There's some really great fights. But they have the advantage of championship rounds. Now, not a lot of guys can do those rounds or even want them. These two can hold up. And you made a point earlier. I felt like you didn't get to finish your thought. But you were starting to say something along the lines that Justin Gaethje, as opposed to just an entertainer, has learned how to win a fight. He's learned how to do strategy. I thought that was a great point. I knew at least what you were meaning. He's going to have to show that, though, against Max.
He will absolutely have to show it. And again, because the fight's going to be long, because they're going to be in there for a long, it'll be back and forth. It'll make us feel like those great fights of the past, Gilbert Melendez and Diego Sanchez and Jones and Gustafson, those long, drawn-out fights where you had two guys that possessed so much spirit, so much will, that they could not separate themselves from each other. This fight card, Chael, is the best fight card that I have ever seen from top to bottom. And I cannot believe that these fighters on Saturday night will not deliver. Guys, I got to tell you how to watch this thing, right? First, we start with our schedule. The countdown show starts at 4:30 Eastern, 1:30 on the West Coast. The prelims then roll in at 6 o'clock, right at 3 p.m. on the West Coast. Then we go right into the main card, the greatest main card the UFC has ever put together, starting at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Watch it everywhere, guys. ESPN Plus pay-per-view for the pay-per-view, YouTube for the countdown show, ESPN. Hey, the big ESPN for the prelims. Not ESPN Plus, not anything else. Big ESPN, because it's the biggest fight card of all time. Chael. Now, news is rolling in, but in our world, Chael, certain things matter. Today, my wrestling coach, the great John Smith, retired from Oklahoma State University. He is the greatest wrestler of all time. To me, he is the greatest coach of all time. He's a mentor. He's a great man. He's done so much. He won 6 World and Olympic Championships in a row, 2 Olympic gold medals, 4 World Championships. Coach John Smith was at Oklahoma State University, Chael, for 35 years. He had so many national champions, 33 of them actually, 153 All-Americans, 490 dual meet wins, 132 conference champs, 2 Hodge trophies in the 33 years he was at Oklahoma State. I love this man, Chael. This man played such a massive part in my life. When I sat in his office to get recruited, I'd been all around the country. And he looked me in the eyes and he said, "Daniel, we are Oklahoma State. You want to wrestle for us." I signed my scholarship that same day. He is such a special human being. The wrestling world was better for it. Coach, I love you, man. I miss you. I'm going to miss you wearing the orange and black and being the face of our program.
That was real beautiful. I imagine that was kind of tough on you. When I saw that news and knowing I was going to see you, I didn't know. Because it's a death, right? It might be the death of a career, but there is still a mourning process. And, Daniel, I'm just a fan. I've only had the pleasure of meeting Coach a couple of times. But I had a picture of him on my wall, like every other kid that wrestled growing up. But one thing that he had, just quick story for him, but he had flexibility. He could put his body in certain positions, 2-knee high crotches, pulling off an elbow. That was never done before. Shooting to this leg while your head is under the guy's shin on the opposite. I mean, I'm just sharing for you. He is simply the greatest technician the sport's ever seen. He is still, today, hadn't competed since 1992. He is still the greatest mind and technician in our sport. Daniel, I went into my garage one day. Okay, I got all these pictures of John Smith. He's all flexible. Go in my garage one day. Hey, I jump rope. I'm all covered in sweat. I got my Oklahoma wrestling shorts on. Bought them at Junior Nationals from a guy. And I tried to mimic a picture. Actually, you threw it up earlier, where he's in the red singlet pulling. But I tried to mimic the picture of John Smith. I couldn't quite get my ankles in that spot. His ankle would go, and then his butt could touch the mat. It's how he could get so low underneath, guys. Daniel, I'm out there in the garage all by myself. I'm having this moment. I am John Smith. I'm going to be the Olympic champion. I tore my meniscus in both knees. Both knees. I have never been hurt. I fought 50 men. I never had a broken nose. Nothing more than a couple of stitches. Nothing. Daniel, I tore my meniscus. I was 18 years old trying to mimic. That's how much I admire the man. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
That is the imprint that you had on the wrestling world, Coach Smith. You will be missed, but your legacy will continue with all the coaches you got around the country and guys like me who take their platform. And I insisted that we talked about you because you are that special. I love you, Coach, and I will see you very soon. Chael, another great show. We are on the verge of UFC 300, guys. Get Chael and I every single week, Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcast, but you don't want to miss UFC 300. It all goes down this weekend from the T-Mobile Arena. Hit the buy button, ESPN Plus pay-per-view. Right now, get it early because you don't want to be late. Until next time, guys, that's Chael Sonnen. I'm Daniel Cormier, the bad guy. The better guy? We'll see you on the next one.